This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Phil Dave, and coming up on this episode, Mark Gardner, the newly named CEO of the CST, will talk about taking over the top job at one of the community's most important organizations. What was it like to be a part of history in the making? Israeli journalist Ital Shemesh chats about being on the maiden El Al flight to the UAE following diplomatic ties having been normalized between the two countries. As children return to the classroom, what will our education institutions look like under social distancing? Rabbi David Meyer, the executive director of PAGES, that's the Partnership for Jewish Schools, tells all. And he's back. Comedian Ashley Blaker offers us another humorous outlook on life as we've come to know it. But before all of that, it's time to have a look through your copy of the Jewish News for this week. And joining me to go through the paper is editor Richard Ferrer and features editor Fran Wolfish. Welcome to you both.
Hey, Bill.
Right, let us begin in traditional fashion by looking at the front page and in bold white letters, quite rightly, New Year, New Middle East. I actually find myself really excited by this story and this prospect.
Yes, I mean, it's a lovely picture, isn't it? You don't see one of those every day, as they say. You can imagine one side saying shalom and the other side saying salam.
Well, of course, we should explain that the picture in question, of course, is an image of an El Al jet sitting on the runway, I believe, at the UAE, probably in Abu Dhabi. And you've got a load of what appears to be people dressed in traditional Arab clothing who are standing on the runway with a red carpet rolled out, actually waving at the plane as it lands. It's amazing.
And they are waving in a friendly way. This isn't some kind of like protest wave or some kind of, you know, aggressive wave. This is a very much a sort of a welcome move, a thawing of bad sort of blood between UAE and Israel. And it can only be seen as a positive thing. It's a sort of a normalizing of relations. That's what it's been called. That, yes, for the first time, El Al has flown a plane over Saudi Arabian airspace, and also the UAE president Sheikh Khalifa bin Zayed has formally cancelled a 48-year boycott of Israel. And from Israel's side, they've dropped any objections to the US sale of advanced F-35 fighter jets to the UAE. So it's kind of, you know, these are only positive things. We don't see moments like this often. When did we ever think we would see El Al flying over Saudi Arabia? Quite unbelievable.
I'm really am blown away, Rich. I feel like a child at Christmas or Hanukkah, whatever one you prefer. It really is like a exciting, as it says, new era, new Middle East.
Yeah, there were some extraordinary pictures to choose from this week. There was the El Al plane with the flags flying out of the cockpit. There was UAE citizens with COVID face masks with Israeli flags on. But this one, I think, really nails the historical consequential moment here. As you said, it's a group of Arabs waving goodbye to a plane with an Israeli flag on it. As Fran suggests, waving, not burning the flag, not chanting death to Israel, happily waving it off like they're bidding farewell to a friend. It was a glorious thing to behold, a real core blimey picture. So that's why it's a poster on the front page this week. The United Arab Emirates are not going to be the only ones, apparently. The Jerusalem Post today says Bahrain is expected to announce normalization with Israel in the next few weeks. Oman might follow. I doubt you'll get Turkey, Iran and Pakistan coming along in a hurry. But this is a thawing. It's a change. Something very, very important is in the air. And I think Arab states who have been violently opposed to Israel on its doorstep for decades are now seeing the benefits of health, technology, security, connections to the Jewish state on a key range of issues. This could be the start of a real positive turn of events in the 21st century in the Middle East.
Well, might I suggest it's one step at a time, and it's a pretty big step to start with. So let's go from Cor Blimey to Corbyn, who is on page 2 of the Jewish News this week. Corbyn drove enmity to IHRA.
Yeah, big book has come out this week called Left Out, written, I will blow my own trumpet here, by two former Jewish News journalists, Gabriel Pogrand and Patrick Maguire. This lifts the lid, or claims to lift the lid anyway, on the ups and downs and ins and outs of 5 fun years of Corbyn in the driving seat of the Labour Party. We got an exclusive extract this week. In it, Carrie Murphy, who was the head of the leader's office, made it quite clear that Corbyn himself was driving the hostility to IHRA. In fact, a lot of the issues that the Jewish community found so abhorrent. Interestingly, Jeremy Corbyn, who, of course, considers himself to be a lifelong anti-racist, the book suggests that he was particularly upset and offended when Lord Sacks, the former chief rabbi, said that his suggestion that Zionists don't get British irony was the worst slur by a British politician since Enoch Powell's River of Blood speech. Apparently that really knocked him for six. That's in our extracts this week. We've got the EHRC report into Labour anti-Semitism now just days away. So this book serves up an appetizer before the main course.
Certainly does. Very interesting stuff indeed. Let's flip a few pages over, shall we? And Fran, on page 31, we're right here for you. And right is not spelt R-I-G-H-T in this instance. It's W-R-I-T-E. What's this?
Well, yes, that was a purposeful pun, as it were. It's not because we all need to go back to school. Congratulations to all the children who have gone back to school this week, of course.
Where are my children? Oh, they're at school.
They've gone back.
Sorry, it's been 6 months, damn it.
Yes, this is an innovative pen pal scheme that's been set up by Jewish Care. A really lovely little story, actually, about how youngsters have been practicing the art of letter writing, something that in an age of emails, instant messages and WhatsApps perhaps is on the wane a little bit. And these children have been writing to older members of the community, people who felt isolated and cut off from the normal activities that they would have been doing pre-COVID. So it's a really lovely way of bringing the generations together, whilst also reinvigorating letter writing and pen pals and all the joy of receiving a letter through the post and all that kind of stuff. We feature three different pairs that have taken part in this scheme. One of the pairs, Doreen Wetchendler, and I hope I'm saying that right, who's 90, and 14-year-old Aaron Gelkoff, they actually discovered that they are related, related through their letter writing. So
wow.
That's quite a discovery. And it's just a lovely thing, you know, youngsters drawing pictures, older members of the community sending birthday cards and stickers to young ones. It's just a really, really cute project that Jewish Care have put together.
Love it. And am I allowed to declare at this stage that although I don't necessarily remember the last time I hand wrote a letter, I do always enjoy writing a good letter if I was to actually take part once in a while. It's good fun, I think. Although if you can read my writing, it's very impressive. That's sadly all we've got time for a look at the paper for this week. Thank you both very much indeed. Don't forget that you can always get your copy of the Jewish News every Thursday. Or indeed, if you are isolating at the moment, you can read the full paper as it would be printed out on the website, jewishnews.co.uk. Editor Richard Ferrer, features editor Fran Wolfish. Thank you both very much indeed.
Thanks, Phil.
This is the Jewish News podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Well, it's the dawn of a new era at the CST, the Community Security Trust. David Deleu has now stepped away from his position as the chief executive, and taking over the reins is Mark Gardner, the former communications director. And I'm delighted to say that we can speak to Mark now on the Jewish News podcast. Mark, first and foremost, mazel tov on the new position. I suppose we need to start off with, though, how might the CST, I'm going to say develop, I don't like the word change as such, but how might the CST develop under your tenure?
That's a great question. We have got over 2,000 volunteers who mean everything to me, and the community should be incredibly proud of the work that they do, protecting schools and other communal buildings and other communal events. I would really like to build further upon that network of brilliant people. And I want to build a CST, actually, in which every member of the community feels that they have a stake, feels that they have a share, feels that they can do their bit. I mean, obviously, not everyone is capable of being a fully trained CST security volunteer, but everybody can play their bit. Everyone can do stuff. Everyone can report anti-Semitism when they see it. Everyone can keep their wits about them and report suspicious behavior when they see it. We'll welcome any donation, no matter how small. And you can always encourage somebody that you know to actually sign up and join CST and learn what it takes to be a volunteer. because I think there are great benefits for you across basically all of your life, because it gives you self-confidence and an awareness of how to carry yourself, how to behave.
Do you think that there is a single most threat that's facing the Jewish community in this day and age? Or do you think that it's the same old and it's a number of different scenarios that we've just got to be aware of?
I think it's a combination of things exactly as you've made out. You know, when we were facing the problems with Jeremy Corbyn and the people around him, it didn't mean that any change had occurred in the level of threat from would-be jihadi terrorists. It didn't make any difference to the fact that online incitement for Nazi terrorism kept on increasing. So there's always a range of threats out there, unfortunately, some of which are always rising and other ones may be declining a little bit. Right now with coronavirus, we know Jewish history. We know what happens when the economy is in trouble, when people lose their jobs, when people lose faith in mainstream politicians, when people need somebody to blame, scapegoats, and all of that in a social media age. I think there might be some really difficult times ahead, but it's very hard to predict exactly what form those will take.
Well, I'm pleased you mentioned about social media, not because I'm pleased about the abuse that so many in our community seem to be getting, but actually because I want to explore a little bit how CST has had to develop over the years, in particular with light of cyber threats now, because of course, like so many people, as we move into this newfound digital age that we find ourselves in, of course, that the threat is no longer just physical, it's absolutely cyber as well. What work has CST been doing to combat that?
This is a difficult area because it's hard enough organizing legally to do security physically at communal buildings around the country. It's hard enough legally to get compliance with CCTV and all the other things that feed into our 24/7 control room. But then when you move into some of the GDPR and the electronic security areas around, actually what is each individual communal organization or indeed people across the community, how are they taking cybersecurity seriously? What measures do they have in place? It is enormously difficult. And I think in a sense, we would have to build a whole other CSC in order to deal with that. We do have a lot of security advice on our website. We've put out special advice over the last few weeks around people attacking shul services that use Zoom. And we will reinforce that advice as we come up to the Chagim. So there's a whole other world of protection and problems out there exactly in the cyber field. And it's a very good question that you asked surrounding it.
Now, on to another subject, but one that's obviously of equal significance. It's imminent that we are expecting the results of the EHRC report into anti-Semitism within Labour. You touched upon it a little earlier on, but let's look a little more about that, because in particular, what are your hopes from this report?
I don't know if it was the pleasure as such, but whatever it was, I was in the meeting with Jeremy Corbyn, the Jewish leadership meeting with him and his team. And obviously it's going to be in my highlights reel whenever it is that I leave CST. It was unbelievable. The EHRC report, do you know what? For me, it's one of those things that actually the doing of the report process is in a sense as important as what the report now finds. The importance at the time of the EHRC taking on this task, and it's a huge task, and I don't think people appreciate the scale of it, the importance of them taking it on was really, really meaningful. It's a little bit like if the Crown Prosecution Service agree that there's enough that they need to properly investigate something, to get over that hurdle with the EHRC, to prove, as it were, that there's enough there, that they do need to take on this enormous job of work that will, by the way, prevent them from doing other jobs of work that also need doing, was itself enormous and obviously was very impactful. What the report will find, I don't know, I've not seen the report. I think the EHRC, my reputation is a body that is probably not dissimilar in its outcomes to something like Ofcom, by which I'm told that generally they won't just hammer the subject of the report. They'll try to find a little bit on one side, a little bit on another side. But at the end of the day, their recommendations will be quite clear, and where the fault lies will also be quite clear. So I'm not entirely sure if we'll get the kind of screaming headlines that maybe some people in our community may want or may indeed expect. I'm not sure. Maybe we will. I don't know. But to have that level of independent scrutiny, independent oversight, and a ruling on the whole thing for the sake of posterity is going to be very important indeed.
Certainly will, and it will be very interesting to see what comes out of it, that's for sure. I'm sure we're all weighted within some degree, an element of bated breath. Just finally, to you, Mark, would you perhaps remind people who are listening to this or possibly watching on social media, if they have any concerns that they have witnessed an incident that they believe to be anti-Semitic, even if they're not sure, that technically speaking is something that you guys can help the CST to try and justify or say one way or another if they think it is or not. What do they do? Where do they go? Because just remind us some of the details of CST, just in case an individual needs you.
Listen, if anybody needs us, we work 24/7. We have a security control room that's permanently manned. If you need us, you can phone 020-8457-9999, which is our, you know, the basic phone number here at CST. You can email us. You can just go to our website, which is www.cst.org.uk, and you'll see there how to do it online. We do also have a free emergency number that people are very welcome to contact us on any time of day or night. Phone 0800-032-3263. I'll just repeat that. It's 0800-032-3263. But if it's an emergency, don't phone us. Please phone the police. 999. All right, let's be really clear about that. Yeah.
Mark Gardner, newly named CEO of the CST. Thank you, not only for speaking to me on the Jewish News podcast. I know you're an extraordinarily busy sort of chap, so I'm very grateful to you for your time. But I think it's only fair that I say, on behalf of as much the community as I possibly can, thank you for everything you guys do. You are literally lifesavers, so thank you.
Phil, thank you so much. Really, really kind of you. Really glad to chat. The listeners, the viewers, won't know how many times we tried to make this call happen.
Probably for the best.
over the last 3 hours, it all looked seamless, but the reality was very different. It's been brilliant speaking with you. Speak to me again, please. Love to do it.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Well, an historic week, honestly. As we mentioned just before in the paper review, images that we never thought we'd see in our lifetime, an El Al flight touching down in Dubai, and quite extraordinary, to say the least, really. But how extraordinary would it have been if you were actually a part of that initial trip? Well, our next guest was journalist Ital Shamesh, joins me now. She's based in Israel, and I'm delighted to say that not only can she talk to us now, she can also tell us what it was like, because Ital, you were there. What was it like?
It was actually really, really an amazing experience. I was so excited to join that trip and so honored to be part of history in the making, to be a part of the first official flight, Israeli flight to the United Arab Emirates, and also the first flight that actually flew over Saudi Arabia that was allowing Israeli airplane to fly over its territory, which means our flight was only three hours instead of 7 hours. And it was really, really, truly amazing to get down from the airplane and to see the local people and the local government people, you know, just coming to the plane and greeting us. I mean, for the first time, you really feel like you're making peace with with a friend, you know, with a country that was never your enemy. And it's such an amazing experience.
Let's unpick this further, because I think there'll be some people listening who maybe don't fully appreciate the complexities surrounding the situation in the Middle East. This wasn't just a case that United Arab Emirates and Israel didn't necessarily see eye to eye. Certainly not officially, they didn't see eye to eye. This was a case of that each country wouldn't necessarily travel to the other. And it meant that citizens who had the respective passports couldn't even think about going to these countries, really, without there being some sort of problem.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. And not only that, I mean, for many years, they banned Israel. They stood alongside the Palestinians. And now, for the first time, they're saying, we understand that there is a complexity with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but we also understand that Israel and us are sharing the same values for peace, for coexistence, for hope, for a better future. We want to get together for future projects in a variety of fields, from economy and culture, security issues that, you know, for many years were under the table. The cooperation between the two states were under the table. And now, for the first time, you know, the close friendship is out in the light. And that's the big difference.
Now, I know you said you were very excited, but was there ever any stage where you maybe felt a bit worried or nervous? Because there are some people, I've read people who've commented along the lines of, this must be a trick, this can't be real, there's no way UAE would suddenly do a U-turn like this and suddenly become friends with Israel. They must have another motive in mind. I don't personally think that myself, and I do believe those who say that. I can sort of understand why they think it, because it's just so unusual, but I believe it's a great move and I'm really excited about the prospect. But were you actually traveling to the country as an Israeli citizen ever concerned about your safety at any time? Were you ever nervous about it?
I have to be honest and to say no, I wasn't nervous at all. I mean, you have to understand that the people of the UAE are very friendly, very advanced, they have amazing English. A lot of them spend a lot of years abroad, studying in the US, studying in Europe. It's a multicultural, eclectic area. So you have people basically from all over the world living there and working there, and you feel completely safe, you know, even if you see people who are more modest or wearing other clothes. But once you're speaking to them, you understand that they're so friendly, so welcoming, warm people, very similar to Israelis, you know. So I felt immediately very comfortable.
So I was going to say, actually, based on what you've just described to me, I imagine that you probably drew some sort of parallels and some sort of familiarities between UAE and Israel, because by the sound of it, you kind of sound like you're describing Israel to me. So you must have been able to draw those comparisons.
Yeah, I have a feeling that the Israelis are going to feel at home over there, because as I said, people are very welcoming, very warm people. It's a country that is very interested in high tech, in economy, in moving forward, in investing in technology. They have the Expo exhibition once a year. And as I said, Israel is very much alike in a sense of leading a startup nation, startup hub, also investing in a lot of technology companies. So we're very much alike.
Now, I have to stress, obviously, for obvious reasons, that I'm speaking to you from the UK, so I do not hail from either Israel or the UAE. But speaking as someone who's on the outside looking in, I feel very excited by this chapter in our history, a moment that I'm sure, like so many, I never thought I'd live to see the day when this would be possible, travel between the two countries we're talking about. Just even now, I can't believe we're talking about it. Are you, and do you get the sense that most of Israel are as excited by the prospects of what this could mean moving forward?
I mean, we're as excited as it can get. I mean, people in Israel are very excited, not only for the fact that we can finally travel to Dubai and see a Burj Khalifa tower in our own eyes, but also the fact that we finally understood that you can sign a peace agreement without concessions, without giving up land, without giving up your right to live in your homeland since the Bible time, you know, for the first time, we understand we don't need to apologize. We don't need to apologize for our right to live in Israel, to prosper, to live in a safety place, and just to sign a peace agreement with a country that understand that we share the same values, that if it want to flourish and succeed and move forward, then they should shake hands with this, you know, amazing startup technological hub. And that's, in my own eyes, the way to move forward and to move the whole region forward. And, you know, one of the ministers of the states over there told us it's not similar to the peace agreement with that Israel had with Jordan or the peace agreement that Israel had with Egypt, because we were never enemies. We never support terror. We never fought with Israel. We share the same values. And I think that's the thing that matter, that the entire world understand that the Palestinian issue is not really an issue. That's not really the reason that we don't have peace in the region. You know, it's more about countries who promote hate speech, who promote hate towards Israel instead of promoting peace. And I think we're living in an era that I truly, truly am excited about.
Well, I think you speak for most of Israel, and you certainly speak for most of the Jewish community that I know in this country. But all I can say is Mazel Tov for being, I think that's the right way to say it, really, being part of this history. This is absolutely extraordinary. But Ital Shamesh, Israeli journalist, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us about being a part of that maiden trip to Dubai. I can't believe I'm saying this. It's very exciting. Mazel Tov, and thank you for speaking to me on the Jewish News Podcast.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, I'm sure it hasn't escaped your notice that after about 6 months, this week, quite a number of schools returned to business. Pupils went back to the classroom at long last, as I'm sure much to the relief of many parents out there, and they are now all trying to adjust to life under COVID-19 at school. To discuss this, about what our Jewish schools are doing, we can now speak to the executive director at PAGES, that's the Partnership for Jewish Schools. That's Rabbi David Meyer, who joins me now. Now, Rabbi David Meyer, first and foremost, I think we need to establish that schools, obviously the Jewish schools, are no exception to the rule. There are certain provisions in place, certain measures have to be implemented to make sure that schools are a safe environment. What have our Jewish institution, our Jewish education institutions, I should say, been doing to prepare for the return of pupils?
Sure. Well, thank you very much for that introduction. First of all, I think it's only fair to say that whilst it is true that we've had a very disrupted service over the last 6 months, schools certainly have been working very, very hard to try and deliver some educational provision in the past academic year. But the big difference that we are coming to now is that the schools are all actively reopening, and our expectation is that every single class and every child will be able to go to school and be able to receive face-to-face studies. Now, as I'm sure you can appreciate, and indeed as everybody or anybody who has been looking at the news over the last few weeks and months has seen, an enormous amount of time and effort has gone into the preparation for schools to ensure that they are safe for the children coming into them. And I think that a number of provisions are taking place in every school. And these are all very sensible actions. So first of all, ensuring that there are the bubbles, that the students that are coming into school are limited in the interactions that they're going to have with other children. And that means that there are going to be staggered timings for the start, staggered timings for the finish, and also in between lessons, ensuring that there is a limited or minimizing of any interaction between students, particularly students outside of the individual bubbles. And you will also see a plethora of different initiatives taking place across schools in order to be able to ensure safety during break times, safety during food times, and the such like.
Can I ask, though, the problem is that with all of this staggered rota and schedule in terms around education and breaks and lunch and things like that, it's all well and good, but we've sort of seen from, and I'm hoping that it's not the barometer, but if we look at the wider society, there have been measures put in place to try and ensure that as few as people as possible do interact with each other. And yet there's always going to be one or two who, for whatever reason, seem to think that the laws don't apply to them. And I'd imagine that subsequently, you're probably going to find the same in schools, that potentially some pupils don't necessarily think the rules apply to them. Just how implemented will these measures be, and how, dare I suggest, heavy would it be a case of coming down on the pupils to make sure that it's implemented, or is that really at the school's discretion?
Right. Well, first of all, it is definitely at the school's discretion, but I think that we're talking in a different environment from a school to any other workplace, in that children and students are used to the fact that there are school rules, and that generally our expectation is that they will abide by the school rules. So whilst it is true that now there are a whole load of new school rules, and I would expect that teachers are going to be quite forceful in ensuring that they are going to be implemented, at the same time, I think there also needs to be a balance, because what we don't want to do, particularly among younger children, is start getting them very frightened and very nervous. And so what we want to try and do is create a new reality, a reality that everybody abides with. And the reality is, looking at other countries and the way that the things have been implemented in other countries, actually, particularly children, are very sensitive and capable of picking up new realities and creating those realities for themselves. So I think that you actually will find that a few weeks in, by and large, everybody will be getting used to exactly what they're meant to be doing, and that will become the new norm.
And of course, you know, speaking of the reality of the situation, it's only within the last few days that we've learned. Yavna College has had to write to parents because a number of the year 13 pupils have tested positive for COVID-19. And I think it's very important to stress, sorry, that if you are listening to this and your child attends Yavna, this was actually a few days before term started. So that does not mean that these pupils have come into contact with Yavna College. Let me make that very clear indeed. But the point is that there may well be an occasion when a child potentially tests positive for symptoms and they would have been at the school. So reality is, of course, that there will be potentially a handful of pupils, if they are in these so-called bubbles, that may actually have to just step away from school altogether for a time.
Correct. You're absolutely right. To be honest with you, this is going to be one of the great challenges for our schools. You are going to have a situation where there are children who are going to be forced not to be able to come into school. Indeed, you're going to have children that have come back from holidaying, whether it be in France or Spain, etc., that may be forced to be in quarantine over the next couple of weeks. I think what we've got to be thinking about, first of all, is the health and safety of our children and indeed of the staff within the school. And so therefore, it is essential that children that are in contact or potentially in contact with somebody who has had COVID do not go in if they're showing symptoms and the such like. But then what the school has done is ordered to ensure the minimization of any form of spread of that virus. And I think it's important to recognise that the dangers to children is very, very low with regards to this virus. So our concern is more about their propensity to be able to spread that wider should they catch it. And obviously, I think at secondary level, there perhaps are greater concerns because the children are a little bit older. But everything that you said is absolutely right. It is not about them, the likelihood of them actually catching it within the school, as opposed to them getting some form of exposure outside of the school. And we've got to try and protect and prevent that from them coming into the school subsequently.
I also feel it's important at this stage to stress how much admiration I think that we should all have for all teaching staff. I'm going to talk about the Jewish institutions, but obviously across the educational world. But I would suggest in particular, for the sake of speaking to you, the Jewish teachers, who of course have had to really adapt, and I'm speaking as the brother of a teacher at one of those institutions, who I know full well have really had to adapt to a new way of teaching, which can already be challenging in itself. And I'm sure that there's something you would probably want to say and declare in public about the teaching staff.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And you're absolutely right. The teachers in Jewish schools, and indeed teachers across the country, have gone above and beyond. I think they are the unsung heroes of this whole situation, and particularly the leadership, the head teachers and the such like of the schools. I can tell you that none of them have taken a summer holiday. They have, in essence, been working literally 24-7, okay, let's hope not on Shabbat, so 24-6, since well before Pesach.
Well recovered.
and it is it is really, really challenging for them because it is a constantly changing landscape. I feel sorry for the government and public health because I know that they don't know everything. But at the end of the day, it is the leaders of the schools that have been expected to create these provisions and ensure the safety for their students and to reduce the nervousness among the staff. And we've got to realise that you have got members of staff that might be vulnerable, might be pregnant, etc., that are now coming into those schools. And yes, I think it's been a really, really difficult time. Having said that, I do want to say that I think that not only have they stepped up and delivered, but it is wonderful to see exciting new initiatives that are taking place, many of which I hope will continue long term, please God, long after we have to worry about COVID. Some of the long distance learning programs that have taken place, the sharing of resources between the schools. Pages have got a website which has really been used by schools across the country with regards to the provision and materials that are available. And it is really wonderful to see how everybody is collaborating in order to overcome this challenge.
Might I be so bold as to suggest that if anyone does have any concerns or anything like that on the rules and regulations that have been implemented at your child's school, then potentially the best thing to do is to either look at your child's school's website, or can they go to the Pages website, hopefully, for more information?
Yes, I mean, I think, first of all, it is important to understand that everybody needs to work together in order to get through this. And it really does worry me sometimes if parents are going to sit back and think, you know what, the school has got to do absolutely everything and I expect everything to be perfect. It simply is not going to be the case. Everybody is struggling to try and do their best. And we need to do this for the sake of the health of everybody, but indeed also the economy. We cannot have a situation where the schools are closed down. So my first desire and request is to ask people to step back, take a deep breath, and let's hope that things settle a little bit before they start feeling they have to write to the school in order to query things. Absolutely, I know that schools are posting information regularly, whether it's on their website or through emails. To be honest, Pages has got a lot of information, general information, but will not have specific information for individual schools. So if you want general information, particularly about well-being or educational materials, then please do visit our website. But with regards to specific information to schools, you should be getting quite detailed information sent to you from your school. And yes, indeed, look on the website for further information.
Rabbi David Mayer, Executive Director at Pages, the Partnership for Jewish Schools. Thank you very much indeed for speaking to me on this edition of the Jewish News Podcast.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time and I wish you all well. Thank you.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Time for a bit of a breather now. I think we need to have a little humorous outlook on life as we've come to know it. And it comes courtesy of comedian Ashley Blaker.
Hello, Ashley Blaker here, back on the Jewish News Podcast. And it feels a momentous week in the Blaker house. Firstly, the children are slowly going back to school. Two started today. A few more start next week. And I'm finally going to get to do some work and won't spend my day refereeing arguments and making drinks, which is pretty much what I've done for the last 5 or 6 months. I'm not entirely sure how the older ones are going to get to school. My 15-year-old has spent the last 5 months going to bed around 9 a.m. every morning. So when school restarts next week, he's going to get there just in time to go to sleep. I'm not entirely sure how that's going to work, but you know what? That's his problem and not mine. The other reason it's been such a momentous week is that I started a new contract with Virgin Media. Well, that doesn't sound that momentous, does it? I mean, why am I telling you this? Well, I'll tell you why I'm telling you this. Because I haven't had a TV in our house for many, many years. And Virgin have offered me TV at no extra cost. That's right, Virgin are saying for the same price I'm paying currently for the phone and internet, I can also have TV with Sky football channels. And I could watch Liverpool on a TV. And there's this massive internal debate in my head, a huge struggle, because the Orthodox Jew in me is thinking, well, we can't have TV in the house. But the normal Jew in me is thinking, it's free, why wouldn't you have it? It's a tough one. It is a tough one. And if you don't know about this, because you might be wondering why I haven't had a TV for so long, is that while many people may believe the anti-Semitic trope that Jews run the media, Orthodox Jews believe we should be avoiding the media altogether. And of course, just in case it needs clarifying, Jews don't run the media anyway, because if they did, my show would be on the BBC all year round. I was moaning about this only the other day to some of the men in my synagogue, but sadly, they only run Channel 4 and Netflix. But whether it's true or not, Orthodox Jews believe we should be avoiding the media altogether. Some Hasidic groups even forbid the radio as well. Believe it or not, there is a world out there for whom listening to Radio 4 would be seriously rebellious. I always like to imagine that the cooler Hasidic kids in Stamford Hill spend their evenings hiding under the covers, listening to the shipping forecast. But more than anything, it is TV that has become this big crusade in the Orthodox world over the past few decades. I was actually once performing somewhere, and they put an advert, not in the Jewish news, no, Jewish news, nothing against the Jewish news, I do their podcast every week, but not quite Orthodox enough, not even, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the name, the Jewish Chronicle. They put an advert in the Jewish Tribune, a very strict Orthodox newspaper. Wouldn't exactly call it a rival to the Jewish news, not entirely think they have the same readership. But the Jewish Tribune wouldn't print the advert because it claimed on the advert that I appeared on television. And I kid you not, the Tribune refused to print the word television. Now, what were they so worried about? Did they really think that there are some people out there who have never heard of television? I presume they were concerned someone was going to buy the Jewish Tribune and read Ashley Blaker television and think to himself, oh, I wonder what that word means. You know what? I'm going to go down now to the library and look it up in the Encyclopedia Britannica. Then they get down to the library and suddenly they discover this terrible thing. Television, a system for converting visual images with sound into electrical signals, transmitting them by radio or other means and displaying them electronically on a screen. That sounds amazing. Why didn't anyone tell me about this? 2 days later, they have a 42-inch 4K OLED screen hanging on the wall where the Jewish books used to be, and now they'd rather stay in and watch The Apprentice than go into synagogue. All because the Jewish Tribune printed the word television. But this really is an absolute obsession in the Orthodox world. A few years ago, I received through my door this pamphlet called Choose Life that sought to encourage Jews to abandon television. And on page 4, it said, about 80 years ago, he invented the television, which was the most venomous, spiritually damaging device the world had seen up to that time. He invented. And you know who the he was who invented television? Well, most of you are probably thinking it was John Logie Baird, but you'd be wrong. According to this book, television was actually invented by Satan. In fairness, if you ever sat for an episode of Love Island, you could be forgiven for thinking it was Satan who invented TV. But anyway, I've now got this quandary. Virgin, should I take it? Should I not take it? I'll let you decide. Maybe you'll come along to my show at JW3 this Sunday night. The last two opportunities to come and see me at JW3 in front of a live audience, and you can tell me whether or not I should get the TV back in the house. Until next time, have a good weekend. See you soon. Bye.
Comedian Ashley Blaker with his take on life as we've come to know it. And that's it for this edition of the Jewish News Podcast. All that's left for me to do is to say thank you to our guests. Mark Gardner, the newly named CEO of the CST, Israeli journalist Itel Shemesh, Rabbi David Meyer, Executive Director at Pages, comedian Ashley Blaker, and of course, let's say thank you to our paper review team. They were editor Richard Ferrer and features editor Fran Wolfish. We must also say thank you to Justin Cohen for producing this episode, as well as say thank you to Adam Bradley for his involvement in post-production. The Jewish News Podcast is in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, and through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, you can always visit gpg.org. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll be able to hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. And don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. If you'd like to comment, then we would love to hear from you. You can always email editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Phil Dave, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.